My name is Robin Demoura, and I am research designer at the Media Lab of Sciences Po, a social sciences lab focusing on the relationships between digital technology and society. In the social sciences, the publication formats we use are not just a means for reaching specific or broader audiences. They are modeling the core of the arguments we make and the stories we tell. For instance, in the discipline of history, Anthony Grafton has shown how the evolution of the editorial use of the footnotes has been the object of a vibrant and foundational debate within modern history, dealing with the relationship between narrative, argument, and evidence. Today, the web medium offers new ways for expressing such relationships, in a context in which digital data is more and more present in social sciences practices. In the past years, technologies have flourished to help to take advantage of the web medium as a way to develop intimate bonds between textual prose and data visualization. We can cite technologies such as Jupyter or Markdown or MDX, aiming at providing ways to build data-oriented research notebooks, or more publication-oriented technologies such as EDIL or LiveMark, which will be presented in this room today as well. These technologies considerably facilitate the imagination and implementation of new forms of writing for the social sciences, but some challenges remain when putting them in practice in the labs. First, writing with data visualization often requires teamwork between specialized activities such as prose writing, data production and analysis, information design. And these different activities, most of the time, cannot be handled by one person. It also demands to collaborate at the intersection of each of these specialized activities. The challenge here is to avoid compartmentalization in order to build consistent and meaningful publications. To finish with, and especially for social sciences researchers, it requires to take into account and to adapt to existing habits and skills, and to manage collaborators' time so that their contribution is focused on their specialty and is dialogue with other activities. In our context, for instance, we cannot always ask everyone to master Jupyter or Markdown. Hence, this talk will focus on two case studies which aim at addressing such challenges, testifying of our attempts at coping with them through a lot of tinkering, discoveries, and also setbacks. I will first present these two experiments in which I have been involved as a research designer, and then I will present some learnings we draw from these experiments. The first case study I'm going to rely on is a publication in Sociology of Technology in the frame of a research project called AlgoPress. AlgoPress deals with the media coverage of artificial intelligence in the UK and US media. It focuses on the critical aspects of this media coverage and tries to understand which AI the media are talking about when they talk about it critically. The research is grounded in the collect of 29,000 articles about AI between 2015 and 2019, and their semi-automatic analysis through supervised learning methods. The goal of the publication itself was to provide an in-depth description of the inquiry materials, allowing main sociologists working on it, Maxime Crépel, to refine his analysis and arguments by the means of trying to collectively formalize them as a website. Maxime, who was the prose writer of this first experiment, has a very good digital literacy and can use tools such as GitHub and Markdown, which will be important for the following. So now let's start with the results. The website is built. We built a one-page publication relying on a scrolling telling mechanism, that is a mechanism in which a visualization space updates according to readers scrolling through the page. So here is a screencast of the website. It first details the collect and analysis process of the data, which is at the core of the research, and then presents a semantic network built by extracting the most frequent terms in the critical articles. The visualization can be explored by the readers, as you can see. And the publication then analyzes in detail specific semantic clusters, such as future of AI or web algorithms. It then focuses on the main insight of the research, which is the highlighting of two distinct approaches to AI critique in the press. This duality is then detailed through different lenses, such as the verb used to describe AI in each of these two clusters, and is detailed through zooms and in-depth analysis. So in order to produce this publication, we divided our work in several steps, which started with a long process of data collection and analysis that Maxim conducted by collaborating with the lab's data scientists, and through preliminary presentations of his first results. We then extracted some visualizations from these preliminary presentations and redesigned them for the web, setting up with Maxim for each of them both a visualization model and an interaction grammar, allowing him to play with the visualization with features such as filtering or the change of some visualization parameters. We then engaged in a process of refinement in which we iteratively enhanced the visualization models, the text, and the interaction grammar according to Maxim's argumentative needs. We finally built a front office version of the website, which is the one I presented to you before. So I will now focus on the third phase of iterative refinement. To allow for a fluid collaboration between Maxim and us, we adopted a workflow based on the writing of MDX files. So MDX is a format mixing Markdown content and custom React.js component specifications, allowing to define the visualization states. Maxim was therefore able to define himself which visualization should go with which part of the text. However, even for Maxim, who is a quite tech-savvy sociologist, the blind writing of React specifications would not have enabled him to really play with the interactive visualizations. So we set up an online space relying on a back office view, enabling him to fine tune the visualizations of the publication through a visual interface. In this back office that you will see now, Maxim could see his text on the left with tiny React.js snippets representing specific views in the visualizations. And on the right, he would be able to play with a configurable version of the visualization. He would, for instance, tweak data mapping parameters. He would be able to change visualization parameters, such as density of label, he is here. He would also be enabled to highlight such results. And finally, he would be able to filter specific parts of the visualizations, as you will see now. So when Maxim was satisfied with the specific visualization state, he would copy the code generated on the left of the screen by his manipulation on the right, and then paste them directly on GitHub in the corresponding MDX file. Committing the change would trigger a preview update of the website through a GitHub action that would rebuild the website after each commit to the content. So this workflow was adapted to the skills of Maxim and allowed us to avoid to set up a full-featured CMS while still allowing us to work very closely at the intersection between the development of the visualizations and their interactive use in the text. So now the second case studies I'm going to rely on has common points with the first one, but is a bit different because it deals with a different topic, and also because it involved more and more various people. This research deals with the economical history of the French region around the port of La Rochelle in the 18th century. In the frame of a research program called Portic, it aims at crossing the data of two digital humanities databases, Navigo and Topfleet 18, which respectively document ship movements from French ports in the 18th century and French international trade in the same period of time. By crossing these two data sources, our goal was to show how the different ports of La Rochelle region articulated different scales of trade and reacted to historical events occurring at this period of time, such as, for instance, the loss of Canada by France after the Seven Years' War. The goal of this publication was to valorize the data of both databases by confronting or confirming existing literature in economic history and providing a didactical case study in digital humanities to history students and other lay publics. So as I said before, it involved a bigger collective, and in this case studies, the prose writers had different habits and use of digital technologies. So the resulting publication also relies on scrollytelling mechanisms, but is divided in several pages. So the first one gives an overview of the concerned provinces and ports of the region, and it is then divided into three chapters that I will just evoke quickly. So the first one that you are currently seeing focuses on the relative decline of the trade of the region of La Rochelle through various diagrams demonstrating it through cartography, tree maps and more traditional charts. While the second part highlights the existence of specialized trade dynamics through the two complementary visualizations that you are currently seeing, which are reused with different parameters along the pages, highlighting different steps of the argument being made. I will stop here for the sake of brevity, but you can of course read it all online after my talk, after today. So in order to build such a publication, we organized our work in two intensive sessions, followed by a third phase relying on the simultaneous development of the different aspects of the website, as for the first case studies. So we first conducted an online data sprint with more than 10 participants, which consisted in digging into the data to produce new data sets, interpretational insights and exploratory visualizations. We mainly used data exploration technologies such as JupyTor to connect this phase. And we then conducted a second intensive workshop, this time focusing on the design of visualizations, summing up the insights produced during the first phase. We provided these visualizations as a starting point to our prose writers, who then started to write the texts for each part of the website in relation to the visualization we design. Finally, we developed a workflow that I will now present to start right away after the second workshop to use the form of the website as a place for sketching simultaneously the texts, the data and the visualizations. To do so this time, we did not ask our prose writers to use GitHub or Markdown, but rather aligned on their dominant habits, which is the use of Word-like text processing tools. So we asked them to scaffold their text within a Google Docs, while inserting within this Google Doc what we called colors, which would be then processed as MDX in order to define the position and the state of each of the visualizations. In parallel, we quickly set up a work-in-progress version of the website in which so prose writer would be able to find their text next to the sketched work-in-progress or finished visualizations going along with them. The process behind this this methodology again relied on GitHub Actions, but this time on a daily basis. Each night, the GitHub servers would fetch our latest commits on the website and visualization development, but also the latest version of the texts and the latest version of the source data from the two databases we were working with, which were updated several times in the process. And then the server would rebuild the pre-production website so that the writers would be able to see an updated version of the ongoing publication each morning. This allowed us to progressively set up the site and to foster very fruitful dialogue, both on the design aspects, the organization of the arguments, and the verification of data. So what did we learn from these two experiments? First, for both cases, the arguments presented in the publications substantially evolved between the start and the end of their iterative phase of collective writing. The making of the publication conducted us to consider additional data, to reconsider some arguments, or to refine existing analysis made during the phases preceding writing. It also enabled us to spot errors in the data. The image you can see on this slide features a visualization model that finally ended up deleted from the final website, but had the merit to have revealed to our team that some of the data we were relying on was not correct. So we all know that transforming data into visualization provides a great means for scrutiny and verification, but we discovered in these experiments that writing interactively with these visualizations requires even more attention and allows to effectively spot otherwise unnoticeable problems. Finally, none of these two experiments were exempt from difficulties. The act of writing prose in relation to interactive visualizations is a technical as well as a conceptual, methodological, and epistemological challenge to social sciences researchers, because it quite heavily modifies their way of writing and thinking. This requires time, and it seems to me that there is no solution which can delete the time needed to adjust to such a process. But more importantly, as we discovered through our feedback exchanges with our collaborators, this time of iteration and adjustment is perhaps the one which is the most interesting on an intellectual plan for them. I will finish this talk by some conclusive remarks. So the kind of writing needed to build data visualization-oriented publications is multimodal, in the sense that it does not rely only on the mode of written prose, but must also deal with other modes of expression, such as diagrammatic, statistical, or computational thinking. This multimodal feature addresses the question of collaboration and specialization, and it is a communicational and organizational challenge as much as a technical one. It also requires an extended understanding of writing, which entails all of these activities and modes of thinking, because it asks for building methodologies and tools enabling the development of each mode of writing in an organic way, producing a space to make them evolved simultaneously, and adopting iterative processes rather than relying on more linear and compartmentalized workflows has been for us the way to go to try to adopt such an extended understanding of writing. So I hope some of these learnings will be of use for you, and I look forward to discuss. Thank you.